US and UK, two countries separated by common corporate governance practices, and serving on US and UK boards. What does it mean? The playwright George Bernard Shaw once noted that England and America are two countries separated by a common language. Are they also separated by common corporate governance practices? What are the key differences between the US and the UK in their approach to corporate governance? And how do these differences impact on directors and their duties? I'm so delighted to speak with Susan Skerritt. Susan was the CEO and president of Deutsche Bank Trust Company of Americas, the commercial banking entity with over 50 billion of assets under management. She now serves on the boards of well-known organizations in the US and the UK. A warm welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. I'm Dr. Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. We make the boards of the most ambitious organizations more effective. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We provide clients with an evidence-based approach to board evaluations and development programs. We have created an innovative board evaluation platform organizations can access and use as part of their fully facilitated board evaluation or their internal evaluation. Large professional service organizations are also welcome to use our platform. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Susan, thank you so much for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
Absolutely, Sabine. It's my pleasure.
It's a big pleasure and honor for us to have you. You are someone who had a very successful career as a CEO, and now you serve on boards in the US, but also in the UK. Not this common, if I may say so. You are in demand and could easily have chosen to focus on serving boards in the US alone, but you seem to like jumping on these flights and come over. What motivated you to accept appointments in a different jurisdiction that is quite different to your homeland?
Well, thank you, Sabina, for inviting me to have a conversation with you about the differences and even the similarities between US and UK boards. I think that I've been lucky to find boards that want my experience and my perspective and where I think I can add value. And you know, when you're asked to interview for a role on a board, the first assessment you make is how you think you can be valuable to the organization. The second assessment is whether this is a board that interests you, that you think you'll enjoy, and that you have the time to devote to. I currently serve on two global boards, a public company headquartered in the UK, and a private company that operates in Dubai and the UK. I also serve on two US boards whose operations are largely in the United States. So I joined the global boards because I've always operated in and enjoyed the global business world. Different cultures are fascinating to me. I also thought that my knowledge of the US could be valuable to a company headquartered outside of the US but operating here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sabina, before we begin talking about the differences between US and UK boards, I want to comment on the major similarity just very quickly.
Yeah, please.
Both US and UK boards operate on the Anglo-US model, which differs from the German or continental model and the Japanese model. Unlike those other models, the Anglo-American model is comprised of a one-tier board where most of the board members are from outside of the company. So while there are differences that we're going to talk about, that fundamental structure is consistent between the US and UK. So while I'm dealing with the differences between the two jurisdictions, there is that kind of overriding similarity.
So let's come to this interesting question. Where do you see the greatest differences between the boards in the US and the UK?
So first, I'll comment on a number of different types of differences. The first that I want to talk about, which I think are the most important differences, are the philosophical differences. And those, to me, come in two forms. UK corporate governance is principles-based. There is a corporate governance code that's updated regularly, and it's applicable to companies with a premium listing on the London Stock Exchange. The code operates on a comply or explain basis. Yep. And that really recognizes that one approach may not be appropriate for all companies. The code encourages companies to choose the governance practices that are best suited to their circumstances, and it enables the company to explain any variation from the code in their annual reports to shareholders. In comparison, the U.S. approach is more prescriptive. There is no corporate governance code per se. Rather, publicly listed companies in America are subject to four areas of law and regulation: state corporate law, federal securities law, stock exchange listing rules, and federal and state laws related to specific industries, such as financial services. These laws and rules must be complied with, or a company is subject to legal action or being dropped from the stock exchange. Mm-hmm. So some very philosophical differences. The second philosophical difference between the UK and the US relates to who the board is ultimately responsible to. In the UK, the duty of directors is to shareholders, but with regard to stakeholders. And that duty that combines shareholders and stakeholders is clearly outlined. Whereas in the US, shareholders' interests tend to be the primary concern of directors. Of course, over the past few years, there has been much discussion in the U.S. about stakeholders. The Business Roundtable, an association of chief executive officers, recommended in 2019 a shift towards stakeholder focus, but that's still evolving. So despite this, when I compare the U.S. and the U.K., I see more focus in the UK on a broad set of stakeholders. But besides these fundamental philosophical differences, there are structural differences. Mm-hmm. In the UK, the chair and CEO are more likely to be separate. Fewer than 10% of FTSE companies in the UK have a combined chair-CEO role. In the US, over 50% of S&P 500 companies, or the largest companies, have a combined CEO chair role, one person serving in both positions. Another structural difference is with regard to committees. Both US and UK boards have three standard committees: audit, nominations and governance, and compensation, or as it is called in the UK, remuneration. However, more than half of FTSE 100 companies also have ESG committees.
Yep.
And fewer than 15% of the largest U.S. companies have an ESG or sustainability committee. And then finally, there's a difference in terms of the corporate secretary or company secretary role. In the U.S., almost three quarters of general counsels or chief legal officers also serve as the corporate secretary. So it tends to be combined. However, in the U.K., only 40% of chief legal officers wear both hats. In the UK, there's more likely to be a separation between the roles, and the company secretary usually reports to the board, and the chief legal officer usually reports to the CEO. So another interesting difference in the governance structure.
Well, thank you for providing also such precise numbers. I mean, thank you so much. This is fantastic.
Well, it's interesting because it's important for me to understand the differences and to understand how stark they are in terms of those numbers. Let me also give you some of the differences that impact directors themselves. In the UK, term limits for board members are the norm. As you know, typically no more than a total of 9 years of service. But in the US, only about 7% of companies have term limits of any kind. And that 7% was recently confirmed by Spencer Stuart in their recent survey. However, more than 50% of the largest U.S. companies have age limits. And that's typically 72 years of age or over is the point at which directors are required to retire. There is increasing conversation in the U.S. about using board assessments, like the Better Boards evaluation tool, to measure the contributions of individual directors And then to have those tough conversations when it's time for someone to leave the board. However, at the moment, U.S. boards tend to rely on age limits to enable board refreshment, and U.K. boards rely on term limits. Another difference that impacts individual directors is in board compensation, or as they say in the U.K., board remuneration. Hard for us American citizens to say that, remuneration. In the U.S., most public boards compensate their board members with a combination of cash fees and equity grants, and often the equity grants are larger than the cash fees. In the U.K., most PLCs structure their remuneration in the form of only cash fees paid on a monthly basis. Fewer than 5% of FTSE companies pay any of the directors' compensation in the form of corporate shareholdings. I've also noticed differences in the ways in which independent directors and company secretaries are prepared for their roles. As I'm sure you know, the UK Institute of Directors, that organization, which provides education to corporate directors and even a director certificate, it's been around since 1903, so over 120 years. And due to the often standalone role that UK company secretaries play in supporting the board, there's professional training and certification for the company secretary position in the UK. In comparison, the National Association of Corporate Directors in the US only began offering a director certification program a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, there is no comparable training specifically for corporate secretaries in the U.S. So you can see a number of differences, some more significant than others, but nevertheless, some significant differences.
So how do these differences play out actually in the boardroom? How does it manifest itself in actual behaviors in the boardroom?
You know, it's interesting, Sabina. There are a number of differences in the way that boards operate in the U.S. and the U.K. and in the way that they're structured, but I don't see significant differences in the behaviors of directors. And maybe that's because of the companies on whose boards I serve, but the directors with which I serve are focused on their duties of care and loyalty and working to ensure the long-term health of the company. So it's true that directors in the UK are focused on complying with the corporate governance code or being able to explain why the approach outlined in the code is not appropriate for their companies. And directors in the US are focused on complying with the laws and rules that have been laid out through the Securities and Exchange Acts of 1933 and 1934, laid out through the SEC and other federal government agencies, through state laws, and through the rules of the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. But ultimately, in both jurisdictions, the most effective directors are interested in understanding what is considered best practice and determining whether it's a practice that would be beneficial to their organizations.
Well, that's interesting. In terms of behaviors, it doesn't actually have this much of a difference than one might think.
Yeah, not in my experience.
Operating in both jurisdictions, what do you think UK companies can learn from the boards in the US?
There are a couple of things that boards in the UK could learn from boards in the US. One, I think, is fairly controversial with regard to director compensation. I believe that it's important for directors to hold shares in the companies where they serve on the board. In the UK, directors are allowed to hold those equity positions, but the company does not issue grants. They don't provide grants as a component of director remuneration. I prefer the U.S. approach of issuing equity grants as part of the director compensation. This ensures that all the directors are thinking like owners of the company. The belief in the U.K. is that there's a conflict of interest, but I actually don't see that operating in the U.S. The other thing that I think is interesting is UK boards have these strict term limits, 9 years and you're out. While I believe that term limits are generally preferable to age limits, which are the norm in the US, the best approach, in my view, is ongoing assessments of individual board members and their contribution to the boards on which they serve. By relying on term limits or age limits, a company risks losing valuable board members who are continuing to add value, despite how long they've been on the board and despite their age.
Sorry, in my mind is, of course, the current presidential race in the US where there don't seem to be any age limits. So, and now thinking the other way around, what can boards in the US really learn from boards in the UK?
Yeah, and just interesting. So this recent Spencer Stuart survey indicated that over 50% of the largest US companies do have age limits for their directors. So it's more of a norm, as I mentioned, not as much as term limits. But I do think that there are things that U.S. boards can learn from boards in the U.K. I personally really like the U.K. practice of separating the CEO and chair roles. I think that's a practice that more U.S. companies should adopt. I mean, the CEO is responsible for leading the management team. The chair is responsible for leading the board. Separating these roles maintains a system of checks and balances and ensures proper oversight of management by the board. This practice also helps to maintain independence, transparency, and accountability within the organization. When the CEO also serves as the chair of the board, it can lead to conflicts of interest, reduced accountability, and potential concentration of power, which may not be in the best interest of the company, its shareholders, and its other stakeholders. The second item where I'd really like U.S. boards perhaps to replicate U.K. boards has to do with where the boards are focused. In the U.S., there continues to be debate about whether companies should be primarily concerned with shareholders or should also be thinking about their broad arrays of stakeholders. In my view, a company has to be thinking broadly about its stakeholders, its employees, its workforce, its clients, its customers, its vendors, its regulators, and its shareholders to be successful in the long run. A company that is only focused on delivering a return to its shareholders runs the risk of being too focused on the short run and not considering the long-term impact of their actions. As the UK code describes, the duty of a director is to shareholders, but always with regard to other stakeholders. And I think that would be a positive step for U.S. boards.
No, very insightful. I mean, thank you so, so much for drawing out so clearly the differences and underpinning it with actual data. I mean, really, really helpful, Susan. Sadly, we have to come to an end. And I always ask the same question, which you might read, which is, what are the three things our listeners should take away from this podcast?
Yeah, and Sabina, you did warn me, and so I have been thinking about this. First, so if you have global experience, whether as someone who has worked outside of your home country or has worked for a multinational organization, as I did, and you want to deploy that experience in your board work, I would encourage you to consider a board in another jurisdiction. While the fundamental expectations for a board member in the U.S. and the U.K. are the same, duty of care and duty of loyalty, you would bring cultural diversity as someone with experience in another country. That experience is particularly valuable if a company operates globally and most of its existing board members are from the home country. The second, I think, important takeaway, corporate governance continues to evolve in every country. By having experience in multiple jurisdictions, you bring perspective about what a board in another jurisdiction should be considering. I'll give you two examples. With my experience dealing with the requirements of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, or SOX, here in the U.S., I have an understanding of what a U.K. board may face as similar requirements are put in place in the U.K. And looking at it from the other perspective, as climate disclosure requirements become a likelihood in the U.S., I've seen firsthand how a U.K. organization addresses these types of requirements. And finally, even if you don't join a board in another jurisdiction, I encourage you to keep updated about how corporate governance is evolving outside of your country. There are best practices you observe in other jurisdictions that could be deployed no matter where you serve.
Susan, thank you so, so much for all your insights, for your time. And I can only thank you. I think our listeners will get a lot out of this podcast. So thank you so much for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sabina.
How can we help you and your board? We at Better Boards are always delighted to hear from you. If you have an idea for a podcast, if you would like to contribute, would like to learn more about our work or see a demo of the platform, get in touch. You can best reach us at info@better-boards.com. Thank you for listening.